Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson RV, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. That's Rob Ensley, Matt Nelson behind the glass. I'm Tom Nelson, and on the phone, the former director of sport fishing affairs for the Northwest Marine Trade Association, dear friend of ours, Tony the Truth Floor.
Good morning, Tony.
Hey, buddies. Good to hear your voices.
Likewise. It's been a while, man. And Tom and I were just reminiscing about the Northwest Salmon Derby series, and it kind of sounds like this is the last of the last event this weekend, of course, the Everco Derby, the last event in the series. This is it. The series is going away, but, man, a lot of great memories. How many years did the Derby series run, man?
Well, Rob, you know, when I was first hired back in 03 at NMTA, that was one of my first assignments, was to build a Derby series. So it started in 04, and reflecting on all of the boats and all of the derbies. I don't know, guys, how many derbies I went to, but it was a ton of them. Trailering that boat up and down the road, a different boat every year. But how cool, you know, when you do something like that, you know, is this thing going to fly? You wonder about it, and you give it your best shot. But once that scent got in the air about an opportunity by businesses to promote, you know, whether it be an outboard motor, electronics, et cetera, trailers, boats, they came running. And not only did they come running, but after a few years, seeing that the Derby series was going to fly, I mean, it was a stampede between contributors. You know, everything on that boat every year is donated by these different manufacturers. So I gave away 14 boats to a winner and two kids boats. And I'll tell you what, when I think about the job during those years until I retired in 17, that was just one of the most exciting parts of the whole enchilada, giving away those boats and the reactions of different people. It was really fun.
And if it wasn't a success, 10,000 people wouldn't have participated in that. I remember years when 10,000 tickets would be sold
across the series.
And that was just in 1 year alone. Of course, the highlight for us was doing the blackmouth derbies up in the San Juans in the wintertime. I mean, the derbies themselves were great, but just seeing everybody and hanging out and having some drinks at night and catching up with everybody, just an epic, epic scene up there at all those events. The Roach, the Resurrection, Friday Harbor Classic. Remember the Anacortes Derby?
The Anacortes Salmon Derby.
1,500 people in that tent. Norm Dix would be there. Tony, you'd be up there talking. Just a scene, man.
Oh, and just, you know, a couple of the memories right off the bat. You know, we broadcast from the inside of a boat one time, you and me and Tobeck, from the Anacortes Salmon Derby. We did a couple shows from Port Townsend during the Limerick Peninsula Salmon Derby. You know, a bunch of them from Everett. I remember, you know, the Everett Co. Derby, the first one we ever broadcast from. We were in the parking lot with rain pouring down our neck. It shorted out the board, and we had to run back to the studio to finish the show. But, you know, that's just, you know, my viewpoint. So many anglers, though, Tony, caught their first fish in a lot of these derbies and learned so much about it, and it was just a rally point for the industry, for sure.
Well, guys, you know, you can dissect all day long why do people go to salmon derbies, and there's just a number of reasons, and Rob identified some of those. But what was interesting to me is during the recession back in 07, 08, and everybody's wallets were getting thinner and guarding your money and et cetera, what happened as it relates to salmon fishing? The people came. And what happened to the derbies? The people came. It blew me away that anglers would set such a high priority that you can take away a lot of things during a recession, but by gosh, you're not going to take away my salmon fishing. So it was very, very cool, and it kept a lot of you know, industries alive. George Harris, NMTA president, will tell you in the 75-year history of the boat show, the second greatest, most successful promotion that they've had at NMTA was the Derby Series. So it was really fun for me to start that thing going and to be a part of it. And again, wonderful experience.
And so Tony Floor, the former director of fishing affairs for the Northwest Marine Trade Association, joining us, and we're getting just a bunch of texts here. You know, hold, wait, what's going on here? Why no more fishing derbies? Well, basically, in a nutshell, we've got, you know, reduced opportunity, particularly in the winter. And I would argue, Tony, that the winter derbies were the backbone of the Northwest Salmon Derby Series. They held, you know, interest in fishing all year long, a number of different events, you know, providing more opportunity for folks. And so I would, so with the loss of opportunity basically is happening on the backs of conservation concerns, but some would argue that they are invalid in that we're trying to protect some a hatchery stock, namely in the Stillaguamish River. So I'd have you react to that if you could, Tony.
Well, yeah, you're right. The winter derbies, no argument from me, buddy, that they were the backbone of the Derby Series. You know, I've been at this stuff for 40 years, and we really thought we had things going in the right direction when mass marking came about in the late 90s and starting to mark all of our hatchery, Chinook and Coho, and today, you know, some 20-plus years later, they're all marked. They're all marked. So take a look, you know, and evaluate what's the purpose of a hatchery fish. Well, you go back 130 years or so when the first salmon hatchery was built down on the Kalama in 1890. That was about the year I was born. That's their purpose, is to support wild populations and especially to provide sport and commercial fishing opportunity. Now we're talking about different things. The winds have shifted. Are we continuing to raise and mark these fish for anglers, for fishing opportunity? Are we raising them as food for the orca, the resident orca population? I'd say it's both, but I think the tide has really ebbed for us in these winter opportunities. Tom, I've heard you know, talk about Area 7 and down to a seven-day fishery this year. That's disastrous. So I think we're way off frequency in my view of where we should be. These fish, millions of dollars are spent to mark these fish so we can tell the difference between a hatchery fish and a wild fish, and we're doing our part. So it hurts to see these winter opportunities get out of the house and out on the water, and some quality fishing on hatchery fish. I mean,
so millions of dollars are spent to mark these fish, but even more millions of dollars are spent to raise these fish, and a lot of these are it's taxpayer money. You know, the government doesn't have any money; it all comes from us. So when we're sitting in a meeting, And the governor's policy lead comes in and says, "Hey guys, we've got a few million dollars to raise fish for orcas." We're okay, fine, but how about the taxpayers that are footing the bill here? I mean, I love to see the orcas as much as anybody else, but when we see the industry struggling somewhat, and the excuse to crack some money open and raise hatchery production to what it once was, you know, it just doesn't seem like the government has our back. Now, when we factor in the 7 days of salmon opportunity we got in Marine Area 7, and Marine Area 7 remains open to commercial fishing for months on end, right now Area 8 is only open for commercial fishing too. So we got two areas, you know, there's taxpayer-raised fish that the taxpayers are not being able to access. That's the problem that I have, and I believe that sentiment would be echoed across the northern tier of the state of Washington, Tony.
Well, I'm with you, Tom, 9,000,000%. You're hitting dead center, drilling the center of the bullseye. Government does not have our back. And in our state, it starts with our governor and his lack of recognition of the importance of a sport fishing industry or heritage, et cetera. And that carries down to and through his staff person who articulates and is involved in season setting processes. But no love. And from either one of those players to the recreational fishery. And then you go back to the department, you know, the guy that takes the snap from center. And I think, again, it is my view, he's doing a terrible job. He doesn't recognize our existence. It's almost like the actions are punitive, putting anglers on the water and providing fishing opportunity, again, underscoring hatchery fish. It's just not there. So I'm a guy, Rob and Tom, that identifying a problem, I really like to identify on the positive and the solution. And I really think that we need a change. It's time for a change. Kelly Susswin has not been in that chair for very long, and he's shown his cards. And there's some type of craw in his shorts that he doesn't like us and doesn't recognize us. And when we speak, he might as well walk out of the room. It's awful. I've served under so many directors in my 30-year career at Fish and Wildlife and working for George at the NMTA. And I've never seen a lack of recognition or putting us in the corner as with this guy. So I think it's important to try and find solution. And recreationals working together, they're somewhat alienated now in our camp, as you guys know. But we need a change at the top. We need a change of a person that will recognize us and the importance of our industry. Anyway, it's a mess. It's really a mess. And I look for light. I hope for light. And 22 is a new year, but I don't see things changing, guys, until those three key ingredients are addressed.
I think you're right, Tony. We got to let you go here pretty quick, but you know, Tom and I were talking about some of the meetings that have been held, and that the particular staffer that works for Inslee walking into a meeting full of recreational sport fish advisors and saying, "Hey guys, I got some great news. I got some fish to feed the whales. You know, we're going to ramp up hatchery production, and we're going to feed those whales. Isn't that great? Well, we've been asking for this for a long time. Why couldn't you help us out? We pay the bills around here. You know, sport fishermen and hunters as well, we pay all the bills down there at WDFW, and I think we get kicked to the curb a little more often than we deserve. But, again, you know, we got to run here pretty quick. Lastly, just and this is just a quick question. I don't even know if you can answer this quickly or not, but do you think we'll ever get our blackmouth fishery back here in Puget Sound? I mean, that hurts, man. That's painful. That's kind of the time of year where all of us hardcore anglers can get out 100%. On the water.
Yeah.
The fair weather folks are gone, and you just see the hardcore folks out there fishing on the Sound or maybe in the San Juan Islands. You ever see that coming back? I don't know, man. I'm not positive on that. But what do you think?
I there's plenty of reason to be negative about it in terms of the outlook. It's a one-year-at-a-time scenario.
Yeah.
And again, in terms of a solution direction, if we can change some of those three ingredients that don't recognize the importance of blackmouth fishing, let alone sport fishing, as a priority, as the commission has laid out, then you're right. But one year at a time. I'm suggesting do not abandon ship. And we have one alternative. I don't own real estate in CQ, but CQ is open in March and April of every year with a two fish limit for marked fish. And I've been running up there like crazy the last several years, and I have it almost to myself. And there are plenty of blackmouth. In three trips in March and April, two-day trips, I put 29 blackmouth in the boat. Mm-hmm. Now, that's reasonably decent fishing. So, you know, we can light our hair on fire and not be able to go to the San Juans and not be able to do this. But there's a few grains out there of what we can do. And I love to focus on what I can do versus what I can't do.
Yeah, Tony, I couldn't agree with you more. And we're seeing an abundance that's increasing with regard to Chinook, and I see a better future. But what I my attitude and view of WDFW has changed profoundly. I always assumed they had our back and were trying to craft opportunity for us. Now I see the San Juans Area 7 open for 7 days while it's open for commercial fishing for 7 months. I no longer see WDFW as an agency that's actively trying to craft opportunity for the sportsmen, and that's what's troubling. But I think we can move it the other way. Tony Floor, we appreciate your time today, buddy, let's go out and bend a rod next time we get a chance, bud.
Thanks, Tony.
Love it. Yeah. Hey, keep up the good work, fellas.
All right. Have fun, Tony. Up in CQ, buddy. See you, man.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate the time.
Coming up next, the critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report is brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
Today is National Fishing and Hunting Day, and hopefully you're out in the field or on the water enjoying all that Washington has to offer. President Nixon proclaimed this National Fishing and Hunting Day 49 years ago. Hunters and anglers fund conservation efforts across the country by paying excise taxes on the purchase of firearms, ammunition, archery gear, and fishing gear. That's raised $5.4 billion in revenue for fish and wildlife conservation in just the last 5 years alone. Rest assured, when you participate in fishing and hunting, you're also doing your part to ensure future generations see the benefit of these healthy outdoor pursuits.
The largest salmon derby on the West Coast starts today in Puget Sound. It's the Everco Derby. Pays out about $20,000 in cash prizes and thousands more in merchandise. Adam Perez won the event in $10,000 last year with an 11.8 coho. It's going to be a bigger one this year, I can promise you that. Anglers got some good news last week when WDFW announced it would extend the season on the Snohomish and Skykomish. On quite a few years, the winning coho has come from one of those local rivers. The Everco Derby is also a big sponsor of Salmon for Soldiers Veteran Fishing Program, with all the beer garden proceeds going to Salmon for Soldiers. Tickets are on sale till 8 a.m. this morning. You can find more information on the web at evercoderby.com.
Ian O'Hearn from John Sporting Goods in Everett says the successful anglers on the Sound have been hitting quite a few spots to find their coho this past week. Ian says the folks seem to be hitting two or three spots before they find a school of willing coho. The top producers this fall have been Purple Haze Hoochies and Ace High Flies behind a flasher. With the dogfish starting to thin out in the Sound, he suggested adding a herring strip to entice coho to bite.
Youth Waterfowl Hunt this weekend. This weekend is the Youth Waterfowl Hunt here in Washington State. Hunters under the age of 16 get to hunt this weekend as long as they're accompanied by an adult over 18 years of age. Shelby Ross from Duck Taxi on Potholes Reservoir says there are more birds showing up every day. The hot and dry weather in the Northwest has consolidated a lot of the ducks towards bigger water impoundments, just like the Potholes Reservoir. He thinks it could be a good shoot for the kids this weekend on the reservoir.
Pheasant release sites open in Western Washington today, with that season running through November 30th. There's a bonus season that runs from December 1st through the 15th. There are roughly 50 pheasant release sites around the state, and about half of them are located in Western Washington. Check out the WDFW website for detailed maps of these release sites.
Crabbers have until October 1st to get your catch record card returned to WDFW. They can either be mailed to the address on the card, or a report can be submitted online at fishhunt.dfw.wa.gov. The data received from the cards is critical for determining future crabbing season.
Archery elk season in Washington this past Thursday. The next elk season is the muzzleloader season that runs from October 2nd through the 8th. The easiest way to view the various hunting season in the state, is to visit the hunting page on the WDFW website and then click on the Summary of Hunting Seasons link.
Statewide Trot Derby still underway and runs to the end of October. Outdoor field editor Mark Uwasa has a great rundown of the Derby, which still has lakes and tag trout left in them, on the Outdoor Line blog. Use the Find Local Lake section on WDFW. Search a lake near you. See if it's still stocked with a tag trout for the Derby. Many lakes still have those tag trout in. With the weather cooling down, that bite will start to heat up for these trout.
Guide Shelby Ross from Ross Outdoor Adventure says the walleye bite's steadily improving on Potholes Reservoir. They've been catching about 10 walleye a day this week, and he expects it to keep improving as the water cools down. Ross has been running crankbaits in the morning and then switching over to night crawlers in the afternoon. Lake is still very low from the summer drawdown, but the launch at Martineau Resort is still usable. The state launch, however, at Blythe is still high and dry.
Today's the last day to dig razor clams on the Washington coast on this opener. All four coastal beaches are open today with a low tide at 10:15 p.m. tonight. Digging usually starts around 2 hours before that low slack. Diggers don't have long to wait for another dig, though. The next clam is tentatively scheduled for October 3rd through the 11th. WDFW will announce the opening a few days ahead of schedule after test results prove that the clams are safe to eat.
Ali Husseini from BloodyDecks.com says a bluefin bite is still cranking off San Diego there. Ali said the average fish is around 200 pounds right now, and the fish are about 100 miles offshore. He's caught 12 bluefin in the 200-pound range on his last three trips alone. Trolling rigged flying fish has been the ticket. Ali said most of the boats are booked solid till the end of the year. Definitely worth it to get on a waiting list, though. Several charter operations he recommends out of San Diego are the Lucky Bee, Pinnacle, and Into the Depth Sport Fishing.
The Northwest Outdoor Report has been brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
And we just dropped a further opener through October 3rd on the Snohomish system, and that system's absolutely choked, man. There's a lot of rods bending over right now in that Snohomish system, and the Skagit, and all over Puget Sound. There's nothing on the Derby leaderboard yet, the Everco Derby. Those weigh-ins won't start probably till 10 o'clock today, but it's fun to watch that leaderboard on EvercoHoDerby.com and check out, you know, how things are progressing. It's going to take a big one, dude.
15 plus?
Yeah, I think we're looking at a 16-pounder to win this event. Mm-hmm. Going to be interesting. You know.
Well, the fish that won the Edmonds Derby was 11.5 pounds clean.
Gutted and gilled.
So that was 14, 15 pounds, 100%. Somewhere in that range. Yeah.
And you got and the difference, obviously, gutted and gilled, but you got the rivers involved too. And you know, there's some of those bigger coho are definitely gonna be in the creeks.
Oh, for sure. The Snohomish system, are you kidding? Remember some of those just gagger coho we used to catch out of there? And the lower Skagit too. It's a little early for those big fish on the Skagit though. We used to get those big hook nose in like late October, early November. I mean, I remember catching some, you know, 18, 20 pound just whoppers out of there. But the Snohomish system right now, it gets that early push of big hook nose in there. I expect to see a just absolute donkey come out of the snow.
So much fun! So much fun on light gear.
Oh man!
I love
fishing the river for those.
Borrow a sled this week and get on up there. Log on to SeattleRifle.org for their Hunter Sight-In days. It's today and tomorrow, 10 a.m. through 3 p.m. Get out and do that. Meanwhile, somebody is pulling triggers right now, and he's usually sitting in this seat right here. He's not. He's Joe Pyburn, and he's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Wellcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Well, usually we got this guy in the studio. We had him in the wheelhouse of the Duckworth yesterday, and he got a donkey of a coho. But we had to give him the day off. No show. Joe showed up in the duck blind today and joins us now. Joe Pyburn out on the youth waterfowl opener, guiding a couple first-time hunters. Joe?
Morning, guys.
Morning. What's shaking?
We're having a spectacular morning out here, man.
That's been great. Pretty
cool. We kind of planned to go up to Whatcom County and hunt with the off-grid boys, but after they spent a couple days scouting, there just wasn't a lot of birds up there. All the farmers are cutting their fields, so the birds are kind of bouncing around. They couldn't really pattern anything, so we audibled and we came down to my Uncle Ray's private lake down here on Whidbey Island.
How cool!
And we snuck in here in the dark and put the decoys out, and the ducks were flying pretty good here right at first light. And Brady knocked down his first two ducks,
sweet,
in one flurry there, and now we have four. So we only need three to go. And man, it's so cool getting him out, Brady. He's been out practicing, shooting his gun, shooting a lot of skeet. Hey.
It's good timing for
that's
this.
That's a mallard tongue. That's a mallard.
That is? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And didn't like what I was saying.
Okay.
but we're having pretty consistent action here. A lot of teal. Got a nice Drake shoveler and three beautiful teal. And, Brady's made some great shots, man. It's just pretty cool to have him out here with us. And we got his dad, Josh Hopp, here with me. And,
outstanding. Beautiful morning, too. He doesn't have to freeze his fingertips off and his toes and all that stuff to get his first crack at some waterfowl here, at least till later in the season. And he hasn't burned the blind down yet. He hasn't followed in our footsteps, which is good. Good job.
No.
Good job, Brady.
Yeah, no, it's we'll be in t-shirts here shortly because the sun is just kind of poking up over the hill here, and beautiful morning, a little bit of fog, so we got Mm-hmm. We got these ducks coming in, and it's all of a sudden you're like, oh, there they are.
Yeah.
Brady's done so, great knocking them out of the sky. And
how many deeks you got out, and what kind of shotguns Brady's shooting? Give us some more details here, buddy.
Brady is shooting a little left-handed Benelli, sweet little gun. And we just put a small spread out. We got about a dozen decoys out. These early season ducks, you know, they're pretty used to, they've been living here. So it's not too tough to get them to drop in here. I don't think I even really should be calling. I think I'm doing more damage than good, but
but that's one of the great what the great things about that early season hunt, and it's a perfect opportunity for kids just because you don't have a very many sophisticated critters coming around there. It's the first time they've had a couple of rounds of shot thrown in their faces. They're not expecting it. It's a great, you know, sneak up and educate some ducks program. But you know, on a bluebird day like today though, you can still expect to have a few tootling around. I mean, typical waterfowling, you kind of need the weather to kind of kick them off. But you know, and on a day like today, you just got to be patient and sit there. So you're in a little freshwater pond somewhere on Whidbey Island, right, Joe?
Yeah. So my Uncle Ray owns a chunk of property here on Hasty Lake. So, you know, I grew up hunting here as a kid. So it's kind of cool to bring Brady down here and let him experience what I got to do this all the time when I was a kid. I was down here, you know, I didn't have decoys. I'd just come lay in the mud and the grass and pass you. And so, yeah, it's kind of fun to be back in here. And it's a cool spot because the geese come in and kind of summer over here, all these resident geese. So during the early goose season, my uncle comes down here and puts a herd on them. And I'll probably get some kiddos in here with my uncle next year for that goose hunt. He hit them pretty hard. So we were kind of hoping they'd be in here this morning, but they're not. But we got plenty of ducks, so we're pretty happy with the way the morning's going.
Yeah, the geese aren't saving Uncle Ray around. I mean, he's never going to give up that passion. when did you shoot your first duck, man? How old were you? You remember?
I was 10 years old. Yeah, I remember. I was 10 years old. Yep, shot it with a bolt action 410.
Yep.
Wow.
And I had to shoot him for a while. it was a big old mallard drake, and I shot him. The first shot, you know, I stood up and he didn't fly, and I shot him on the water, which is never a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he took it like a champ, and then he started to fly, and I hit him again, and he went down, and then I had to put another one in him to finish him off. But, that was my first duck, 10 years old.
So now my understanding is that you're taking next Saturday off too, because you and Rob are going to be heading east for some elk archery action in Montana. What are you hearing? What's going to be the game plan for that, Joe?
Boy, I mean, we're coming into what should kind of be the peak of the rut over there. So I'm hoping we can just get over there and locate some bulls. And then my plan is always to just kind of be quiet and get as close as possible to those elk before we kind of start our series of calls and rubs and, you know, raking on trees. You know, they've probably been called out a bit at this point. So at this time of the season, you kind of got to get in their comfort zone and kind of get in where they live and be close to them before you kind of start your calling. They're used to having guys scream at them from, you know, 1,000 yards away. And then they start moving towards the elk, and the elk just naturally at this point just start to kind of move away from those calls. So we're going to go over there and we're going to do the sneak and get as close as we possibly can to those elk. If we can hear some bugles or locate some sign, and then we're just going to, you know, try to make some magic happen and get an elk down.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting down in the woods, man. I've been shooting the bow last couple days. I got a new sight installed down at Mays Archery down at Puyallup a couple days ago. Mike got my bow all tuned up and everything, and pretty comfortable shooting now. I've been stretching it out to 40 yards and pretty good group, and ready to go. I'm just ready to get out in the woods and, of course, have my feet on dry ground,
dude.
Too, you know.
I was out last night flinging some arrows around, and I'm feeling pretty comfortable with my shooting, too, and been practicing the calling a lot. That's kind of what I've been doing every night, and I know you have too. So, I'm excited to get out of here, dude, and go do some hunting.
I've been screaming in the neighborhood. You know, down at Gig Harbor, I don't know if they really know what that is. It's not like a pterodactyl flying through the neighborhood. But
I know. I was telling Rob last night, I was like, I got this little thing going on now in the neighborhood. I've been on my deck every night, you know, making elk sounds, all kinds of different cow calls and bugling and just kind of tuning up my calls. And I went to bed early, and I lay down in my bedroom, and I had the windows open, and I hear a bugle across the street. So now I got you got Bayless is my neighbor. So I think we're going to have kind of a cool little trifecta of bugling back and forth in the neighborhood there. Really annoy the rest of the folks.
Yeah.
Who needs smoke signals anyway when you got a bugle handy, right?
No question.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm laying in bed and I hear this bugle, and even though I know it's in my neighborhood, I'm like, oh, was that a bugle?
It was a Snohomish bull elk.
I'll never forget laying in our tents last year in the middle of the night, and that bull was screaming just, 200 yards from our tents, and we're just like, I bet I slept 30 minutes all night long. killed me.
Yeah, my face is all puffed up.
Oh, yeah, you got stung by a bee. It was just a complete disaster. But this year, we've got EpiPens this year. I've got a couple. You've got a couple. We're loaded up with EpiPens. We're ready to roll. So, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yep.
All right, Joey.
All right, go get them.
Get back to the hunt there, buddy, and get that new hunter fully converted and just take him right from duck hunting and start talking about big game, and that'll wreck him for life.
Poor kid.
Yeah.
We're going to have him messed up. Trust me.
Yeah, Brady, perfect.
Brady's life was changed this morning, and it will never be the same.
No question about it.
All right, Brady, go get him, buddy.
All right.
We're proud of you.
All right, Joe Pyburn. We'll talk to you soon, man. You take care.
Later, guys.
All right. Coming up next, the hottest report we heard all week in the techniques you need to succeed. It's RoyRobinsonRV.com's Really? Where? And it's next here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really?
Where?
Just coming back. The island of Tinny and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
Ocean to the red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonRV.com's Really? Where? RoyRobinsonRV.com will take you anywhere. Really?
Head on up to Smoky Point and check out the all-new Roy Robinson RV Center, 15855 Smoky Point Boulevard. You're going to find a complete selection of Class A diesels, Class Bs, Class Cs, Super Cs, travel trailers, fifth wheels, toilet haulers, pop-ups, campers, boats, and so much more at Roy Robinson RV Center, RoyRobinsonRV.com.
We beat this one to death the last couple weeks, but it's still the Silver Salmon Run here in Puget Sound, and now it's kind of transitioning into the river systems now. North Sound rivers are loaded, particularly the Snohomish, Skykomish, Skagit rivers. A lot of cohos in there right now. How do you catch them? We get this question all the time on the text toy here. How do we catch these cohos in the river? Dick Knight spoons are one way to go about it. Drifting them through on a lot of guys using really, really long leaders. I used to truncate that down to, say, maybe a 3 to 5 foot leader with a dropper. And you just want that thing working out there, okay? A wee Dick Knight, and you would not believe how tiny they are. They are just tiny, but they crush those things. A little smolt are very aggressive.
They are.
Even the little coho smolts in the river will just terrorize everything in the river. Like if there's a steelhead smolt in the river and a coho smolt, you can kiss that steelhead smolt goodbye. The coho smolts just dominate them, and any little shiny thing in the river, they'll chase down and hit it. And those little wee Dick Knights, you want the wee Dick Knights and the size ones. Those are the only two ones you need. The froggy pattern, the half and half, the Michael Jackson. It's the black one with the sparkly stuff on it with the. It's got the sparkly stuff on it anyway.
The glitter.
There you go. They work great. And you fish them through on a dropper, bring a little box of different size weights
because
you're going to be changing your weights throughout
the
day.
And you need to run that lead on a sliding dropper.
On a sliding dropper. Call it 6 inches, just enough to where that thing's just up off the bottom. You swing it through, and then you reel it in really slow. And a lot of the hits will come right at the bank or right at the boat. They'll follow it till it's almost to the rod tip. You'll be just ready to lift that out of the water, and boom, there's a coho right there. And don't forget to reel it all the way in really slow. As that thing's just swimming back, back to your rod tip, you're going to get slammed. The next technique would probably be Vibrac spinners. I've just caught a ton of coho on those things.
Aren't those more of a colored water deal, though?
No.
I mean, spinners, you get them in clear water.
Especially on the Skagit.
Gotcha.
Especially on the Skagit. And I made a living fishing those things on the drift from the jet boat.
Yeah.
pitching them into the wood, drifting down the river, chucking them into wood and onto the flats and just working them back really slow. And some of those big, deep runs, you know, just cranking them back really slow. And the trick to them is throw them, get them out there, let them drop to the bottom, and then give them a pop, get them spinning, and then keep them spinning as slowly as you can get that thing to spin. You'll just feel it thumping as it's going along the bottom. You don't throw them out and reel them in on the surface like you would for a trout. That thing's got to be down deep. You don't want it banging the bottom, just right off the bottom, and reel it in as absolutely slow as you can bring it back, and they will hammer it.
And you'll see the rhythm of that blade on your rod tip, because you do need to be using a spinner rod that's got a very, very limber, sensitive
for sure.
tip, and get that thing coming back in. You know, and then in the saltwater, we got a couple texts from some guys that are struggling in the saltwater, and here's the deal. If you've got a couple downriggers on the boat, great. You need to weld one at 35 feet and leave it there all day. And then you can play around with some marks deeper in the water column with the rest. We caught them at 50. Mm-hmm. We caught them at 65. We caught them at 77.
It seems like 50 to 80 is the yearly kind of zone, 100%. Really. We're going to catch most of them.
But keep your speeds up.
Yeah.
You know, if you start seeing 2.7, you know, you need to keep those speeds up. But assuming a zero current situation, which is bull crap because we never get a zero current.
Well, that
current.
Never works. We're not the Great Lakes here.
But you need to kind of keep those trolling speeds up about 3.0. And then just as soon as you see anything going on in that rod tip, you need to beat the fish to the rod. You need to be the one to release it off the rigger, not him, because they're coho are relentlessly short strikers.
Yeah.
And they're only you get a little bit. You're going to lose half of the ones you catch. So make sure you convert those opportunities. Look for surface disturbance in the salt water. Go. I would rather somebody work a rip all by themselves. Then go park on the shipwreck, which there's 500 boats around the shipwreck right now, I promise you. But go look for a rip. And then if you're still not getting bit, just get out by yourself somewhere. And, you know, like, you know, we were heading for the north part of Admiralty Inlet yesterday, and we found fresh waves coming in. I bet there's been a good bite this morning. I haven't heard a whole lot going on just yet. But
I'm going to get to this funny text here in a minute. But you nailed it, though, Tom. So one downrigger at 35, another one kind of making adjustments between 50 and 80. And then if there's three of you on the boat, run a cut plug out the center on a boat rod.
Yep.
On a 4-ounce kidney sinker and just shoot it out there about 50, 60 feet and drag it around up there on the surface. And you'll be surprised how many hits you get on that with those fresh coho pushing in. And you might get some of your bigger fish actually on that. We call it a whiskey rod.
Yeah.
Just that boat rod out the center, you know, down the prop wash. Doing the deal out there, and it's going to be down 15 feet at the most.
If you don't want to use lead, you can run a diver rod, do the same kind of thing
Works
back
good.
There. But don't be surprised if the biggest fish of the day comes on that one.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
you just got to be patient because typically in the freshwater or saltwater, it's going to be a first light snap. Now it's 100% light out there. And, you know, kind of around 8 o'clock, there's a little bit of a lull. You know, another bite, 9:30, something like that. It gets tough again around 10. But then at noon, for some reason, when that light level peaks again, there's going to be another snap. Look for another bite around tide change somewhere. Okay, but just be patient. Just because you're marking, if you're marking fish, stay where you're at. Stay where you're at. You've found them. You just got to get them to convert and bite. And that's the challenge of coho fishing is they just quit biting. You know, and the cool thing about Chinook.
And the further down they go in the sound, the tougher it gets. And, you know, slag pile, talking to Gabe Miller from Sportco yesterday, said, you know, the first thing in the morning, slag pile, there's been a few cohos coming off of there. And then again in the evening, I guarantee if you hit it at tide change or something, though, you're going to have a shot in the middle of the day. But that's kind of what it is. Got a question here on the text toy, 710-710 from the 253. Can you use a meat line in the river? I know that's your favorite technique for catching salmon, Tom. Can you do you ever run a meat line in the river?
Stop it.
Stop it. Meat lining is something that there are quite a few folks use in the South Sound. The currents are so heinous down in the South Sound around the Narrows that it can be difficult to troll some of those areas, especially if you're trolling deep. And a lot of the guys run meat lines down there with heavy gear off of them. And Tom just absolutely loves that. It's one of his favorite ways to fish.
If a nice fishing rod had a baby with a downrigger, that's the evil spawn of that would be a meat line, right? Because, you know, but I understand, you know, I like getting away from downriggers too. on occasion. You know, it's why we, you know, why we mooch. It's why we, you know, go down to Buoy 10. You don't mess around with downriggers and stuff like that. And the cool thing about a meat line is, you know, you don't have this thing, you know, constantly mounted on your gunwale. You're going to pick it up and actually kind of reel a fish in with it. But, yeah, it's they're really popular down there. I was shocked when I went down there fishing with Bob Buchanan. And saw how many of those I saw.
Oh, there's tons of them. It's just because the currents just rip so hard down there. It's hard to do anything else. But anyway, that was from the 253. I always get a kick out of that one. Hey, from the 206, let's hear some ducks sitting in the water. Yeah, we almost had one there. Joe was calling one in. It sounded like it buzzed the tower and took off. But and then it hit a couple teal, though. That was cool. Probably, I'm sure he's running Boss shot shells up there. I guarantee Joe got them loaded up with some of those blended 3.5 Bosses. Those things, one pellet would smoke a teal coming through at 50 miles an hour.
No question. Of course, the Everco Derby is going on today. It's the biggest salmon derby on the West Coast. And, you know, we've had some questions about, you know, hey, will there be salmon derbies? And actually, you know, some of our friends in the San Juans, you know, just pinged us and said, hey, listen, you know, we get our winter blackmouth season where we're going to have derbies. And you know, and I hope so because, to see the community come out and support an event like the Everett Coho Derby, like Salmon for Soldiers and all this kind of stuff, it's kind of what's the best part of living here in Western Washington is experiencing Puget Sound, experiencing, you know, being outside, right? And you know, again, that's where the real world is. It's not to be found on your computer or a computer screen or on the TV. The real world is found outside. And that's
it's
that's
funny.
What,
that's where people have gone too.
It is.
Tony mentioned 2008, and I vividly remember that. That was a tough time.
Yeah.
You know, for our charter business in Alaska and for everyone, that was a difficult time. But people kept fishing.
Yeah.
You know, people just fished their way right through it, and
right.
They hit the woods. They're hunting and fishing and doing the deal. And COVID blew it up.
Yeah. And for the first time, we're seeing a decrease in the average age of RV owners and boat owners and hunters and anglers.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to see people kind of returning to the traditional pursuits. And that's what we try to do with you here on the Outdoor Line every Saturday morning is share some of our experiences with you. And you hopefully can share some with us as well. And that's what we learn from each other. That's
kind of
the whole deal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It blew it up to the point where I'm literally making phone calls right now to get supplies for next summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on the phone with Daiwa yesterday. I'm calling Gabe down at Sportco, like, hey, we need this rod and that reel and this line. And, like, you better get it in right now. You're not going to get it by next
summer. Dude, I had four new halibut rods show up at my place yesterday.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, so, yeah. And it's, but anyway, it's a passion. And I hope it becomes one for you, too. You missed any of the show, jump on theoutdoorline.com for podcast. MyNorthwest.com has segments as well as the Apple iPod podcast app. too many P's popping the P's. Give us a follow on social media at Joe Pyburn on Instagram, at Rob Ensley, at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. For Matt Nelson behind the glass, Joey Pyburn somewhere in a duck blind, Rob Ensley, I'm Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line at 710 ESPN, Seattle.